Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is August 30th, 2017. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 21,892, the NASDAQ at 6368, and the S&P at 2457. Our topic tonight is education tax benefits, and I'll tell you why I wanted to talk about that sooner than later as we get into the show. So education tax benefits, and just as a reminder for people who might be driving in their car and thinking, well, gosh, I'm not interested in that. Let me quick flick the channel or change the radio station. No need to do that. There may be information that might be helpful for you in the future, maybe helpful to family members that you may have. You might be a grandparent who could benefit from some of the information we're going to cover tonight. But you should also always know that during the show, if you have questions, we are live. You can call in and ask questions, even if they're off topic. We are live. We do take questions. Lori C. is in the studio with me this evening, and she answers calls, takes your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we could talk without confusion. And while we do discuss general financial planning topics each week, we don't discuss specific investments, but you can also ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. So you're in the car and you think I'm talking about education tax credits, but you might have a question about what you should be contributing to a 401k. If you have questions, you can talk live, or if you are not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and then I'll answer it as quickly as I can so that you can hear the answer to your question. The number to call in is 610-758-8810. The 8810 part, very easy to recall since our station is 88.1. So the phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Last week, I talked about highlights from prior shows that we've done. So I also like to periodically mention that if you are interested in listening to a particular topic on some matter in your life, a financial decision that you have to make, there are podcasts on wdiy.org or on yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can scroll through and see some of the topics that we've touched on and listen to those at your convenience or download them as well. So again, tonight, education tax credits. So what I want to go over tonight is there are tax benefits for higher education and some not necessarily higher education. I'm not sure I'm going to get into those. Depends on the time we have. But in particular, I'm going to focus on higher education tonight. And those tax benefits come in a number of different forms, which means they have a different impact on your tax return. You can have a tax benefit for higher education cost that might give you a tax credit. It might give you a tax deduction, or it might give you the opportunity to have some investments that grow tax-free. And when you use those monies for education, you don't pay tax on them. So there's a number of different benefits that we have available to us for higher education. And I'm going to go through those. But one of the reasons I thought we should talk about it sooner than later is this is the time of year that people are paying tuition bills. You may be paying the tuition bill monthly. You may be paying the tuition bill all at once for the fall semester. You may know that you're going to have a tuition bill maybe starting in January for those kids who might start school in January. How you pay your education cost, whether it's for your child or yourself or a spouse, how you pay those education costs could impact the tax benefits that may be available to you. So if you listen to the show every week, you know we say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. In highlighting this topic tonight, I want folks to be a little bit proactive because I have one more little piece that spurred me to have this topic, which is right now, if we don't have further tax reform, there are a couple education benefits that we have had in the past, which may not be available in the future. One of them is something called the tuition and deduction, or the tuition and fees deduction. That was ending in December of 2016. So technically in 2017, that's not available at all. But I am going to talk about it in case they decide to extend it for 2017. The other tax benefit is called the American Opportunity Tax Credit, which has been a phenomenal, phenomenal tax credit for people that qualify for it, depending on filing status and your page one adjusted gross income. That is a very nice tax credit. That is set to expire at the end of this year, December 31st, 2017. Why do I want to talk about it now? Because for people who may not have been eligible for the credit, maybe because of the way you paid for education expenses or didn't pay for education expenses, or maybe you're going to have those education expenses in January. If we talk about it right now while that credit is available, maybe there's some things you can do before year end to make sure that you still qualify for that credit in 2017 in case it goes away in 2018. Now, granted, that credit had been extended already a couple times. People love this credit. I would hope and expect that there's a good chance the American Opportunity Credit could get extended. But if it isn't, and we have not seen tax reform this year, maybe there's some things you could do that wouldn't hurt you regardless, meaning you could get the credit this year if you didn't otherwise set yourself up to get it. That way, if it goes away, you still benefited. If it comes back and you got it for this year when you would otherwise wouldn't have, you still might be okay. You've gotten the benefit. It's a credit that's available for 4 years. That's the American Opportunity Credit. So what I thought it would be worth doing is kind of talking about these tax benefits now, kind of give you an overview, and then talk about those ways that we can see if we can make sure we get a tax credit available if it's there. It sounds a little detailed. I'm going to try to kind of pull back and give you some big picture numbers to make it a little bit easier to understand. Bottom line, if you do have a student in school and you think you might qualify for some of these credits, or you have no idea that you might, you know, reach out to a professional, a financial planner, or a tax preparer who might be well-versed in the tax benefits for higher education to make sure that you're maximizing any benefits that might be available to you. Another reason to be proactive, even if this particular credit wouldn't apply to you, but some other education credit might, you might be able to put more into a 401k, for example, and lower your income and qualify for a credit that you wouldn't have had you not done the 401k. So many of these tax benefits around education are contingent upon being within a certain adjusted gross income, which is your page one income. And boy, if you could have just maybe moved your income down $2,000 or $3,000, maybe you would have qualified for some of these benefits. So that's why we still have September, October, November, December. We still have 4 months to do a little planning for you. You should be doing the planning to look at your income to see if you are eligible for any education tax benefits. Are you really going to qualify for them? And if you're just on the cusp, you're just on the edge, and a little bit of planning, a little bit of maybe extra saving into a retirement account might make a difference of you getting a credit, then you should be looking at that. I see that we had a call from Mitch in Allentown. Mitch, hang on to the line. I'm going to take your question off air, as you've indicated, as soon as we come back from the break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I'll be back in a moment.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about education tax benefits. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, if you have questions, it doesn't have to be on that topic. It can be any topic, which Mitch called in to ask a question, and he dialed 610-758-8810. And Mitch, this is a great question. Mitch called in and said he maxed out his annual Roth contributions. That's a Roth IRA. That's a way to save in a retirement account outside of an employer plan. And you don't get a tax deduction when you're putting money into a Roth IRA, but when you invest that money, it grows tax-free. And as long as you take out a qualified distribution, which, you know, there's certain time and age requirements, then you won't pay any income tax on those earnings. So we love Roth IRAs. And the income thresholds for being able to do a Roth contribution, for example, if you're married filing joint and you pay, your page one income is $184,000 or less, you could put $5,500 into a Roth. And if you're married, both spouses could, as long as you have earnings of that amount. You have to have earnings to put money into a regular Roth IRA. There's a phase out between 184 and 194. Anything over 194, you can't make the Roth contribution. If you're single, the threshold is $117,000 or less. Phase out between 117 and 132, and if you're over 132, you can't. So Mitch indicated that he had maxed out his annual Roth contribution. If he's over age 50, you could do an additional $1,000. If your spouse over age 50, you can do an additional $1,000. So the max, if you're over 50, is $6,500 into a Roth under those thresholds. So Mitch's question was that he maxed out his annual Roth contribution. What should he do with his extra money? And he's asking about the benefits of paying down, I assume, debt, and the benefits to investing in the market without the benefit of the Roth IRA. Mitch, you want to think about, when you're looking at extra money that you have, you want to have a particular pecking order. So to the extent you have a reserve, a six-month reserve, you want to make sure that you have at least 6 months of expenses, probably tucked away into like a bank account or something like that. And then if you get an employer match at work, if you have a retirement plan at work, generally, we like people to put money into their retirement plan at work in order to get a match from an employer, which is free money. Now, just to diverge here for a second, if you have an employer plan at work and you're in a very low tax bracket, you might want to look to see if your employer plan has a Roth feature to the 401k, because if you're in a lower, very low tax bracket, you could put your part of your 401k contribution into a Roth piece, or all into the regular 401k piece, which is then you would get a deduction for that. You're not going to pay federal tax on that. If you did the Roth sleeve, you would not get a tax deduction for that through payroll. So if your employer has a Roth feature, if you have a plan at work, you might benefit from putting money into the Roth, but we want you to get that match. That's free money. After you get the free money, we like the Roth contribution as you've done, Mitch. So you want to check to see if you've had done those other couple things I mentioned, emergency, and if you have availability to any employer plan, you want to get the match. Then the Roth, and then to the extent you still have extra money, you could always put more into your employer plan if you have it available. Now, if you have a debt to pay down, now Lori just mentioned it was the mortgage. So the benefits of paying down a mortgage, that's a little bit more complicated because you want to look at your tax return and coordinate with whether or not you're getting a deduction for it, because we like to look at the interest rates that you have on the mortgage. If you have an interest rate on your mortgage of 3.5% and you're getting an income tax deduction for it, and let's pretend you're in the 25% tax bracket, you know, what did I say, the rate 3%, it's much less than that. You're not really paying 3%. So if your investments outside of if your investments are earning a better rate of return than your after-tax cost of your mortgage, then there may not be a benefit to paying down that mortgage. You want to kind of weigh and see that after-tax cost of that mortgage, what it's costing you. What I like to see, too, is if you mention investing in the market, you know, there's all kinds of extra questions that have to go into that, like what's your risk tolerance, what's your cash flow, so many different pieces. But let's pretend you do still have extra money. If you wanted to build up a little bit portfolio, the advantages of investing outside of a retirement plan is, number one, you could tap it if you needed it. The Roth, by the way, if you put money into the Roth, you can always take out those original contributions. So that in itself is a little bit of an emergency, although I don't like people to touch that. But let's say you've done that. You've done a little bit in the 401k. You have your emergency reserve. You have this extra money. By investing in it, you have the opportunity to kind of let that work for you. And you could get tax-favored treatment on those investments. When I have seen people concentrate so much about saving in retirement plans, sometimes they've built up their 401ks to such a degree or their IRAs to such a degree that when they retire, every dollar they take out of those retirement accounts ends up being income taxable, and it's ordinary income taxable. So I really like the idea of having an array of investment vehicles when you're looking at Roth IRAs or retirement accounts or just regular individual or joint accounts. It kind of gives you some options at such time you have to take money in your retirement years. It gives you more opportunities for tax planning. You could take a little bit out of this bucket with maybe no tax implications, a little bit out of this bucket maybe with capital gains or qualified dividends, or a little bit out of this bucket for the IRA accounts. So I like kind of looking at a diversified account type, we might say. So Mitch, I hope that helped. I hope that answered your question. I like kind of doing a variety of things. I like people to have options. I really do. It makes a big difference. We had a client who had invested, as I mentioned, all into his retirement account. And then he retired and all of his money was in an IRA. We were fortunate enough that we actually had a few years where we could do some conversions to Roth IRAs. That is one other way to get money into a Roth. But then you kind of have to wait to take it out after, you know, 5 years after the conversion. This guy was already retirement age, etc. So we did get some money into a Roth IRA for him. But if we hadn't done that, every dollar that would have come out of his investments would have been all ordinary income. And then it becomes a circular calculation. Every time you take out $1,000, you need $1,250 in order to pay the tax on the $1,000 that you're taking out. generally speaking. So we were fortunate enough to be able to convert some money to Roth. You know, 10 years later, he was taking out some money. We were watching the tax brackets, and we were able to meet some of his cash flow needs with a little bit from the Roth, so he didn't have that big tax hit on the whole amount that he needed. So, Mitch, I hope that helped. When we're coming up on our next break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on some tax benefits and why I want to alert you to paying attention to how you're paying for those. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about education tax benefits tonight. But if you have questions, of course, I'm happy to take them. I love questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We can talk live on air or off air if you're not comfortable talking on air. So the reason I wanted to go over some of these education benefits is because you really want to plan what you're doing so you don't mess up your eligibility for certain tax benefits. As I mentioned, we have tax benefits that are available to us for higher education cost. Those tax benefits come in the way of something called a tax credit, which is wonderful because that is a dollar for dollar tax saving. So that if you have $1,000 of tax and you are eligible for $1,000 of these education tax credits, then your tax would come to zero. You see, that's why it's wonderful to have tax credits. It's a dollar for dollar offset against your tax due. There's something, we have some education deductions, and some of those might be gone. The tuition and fees deduction was supposed to expire at the end of 2016. I wonder if it will be extended into 2017, as every year it seems to be extended. But right now we can't necessarily count on it. But I will talk about that a little bit. So a deduction just comes off our income. So a $1,000 deduction of income might only give us, if we're in a 25% tax bracket, a $250 tax savings. So you see the difference between a deduction and a tax credit. Tax credit, dollar for dollar. A tax deduction is just a deduction on income. It's not a dollar for dollar tax savings. And then, of course, we have a tax benefit of tax-free growth. And where do we get something like that? Well, there are something called educational savings accounts, and that is a savings tool, which I hardly ever see. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever had a client who's ever even had one. So the educational savings account is just, you can fund it with just so little money, but that is also available for like elementary and secondary education as well, tuition, that type of thing. But for the most part, when we think about tax-free growth earnings, as a tax benefit, we're typically talking about the college savings plans, the 529s. 529 stands for the Internal Revenue Code section. So 529s are when you make a contribution to a savings account, and if you use that money for qualified education expenses, you can take the money out and not pay income tax on any of the interest, dividends, and or growth on that account. Then there is also another tax benefit, which is an exclusion from income. So not a tax credit, not a deduction, not tax-free growth, like literally an exclusion from income. We don't see that used as often either, but typically what that is when someone uses savings bonds that they've had, and they use certain savings bonds, there's certain criteria, certain savings bonds for qualified education expenses which could include contributions to a 529. So here is a benefit that a lot of people do not have on their radar. If you are someone who has savings bonds in the safe deposit box or on top of the refrigerator, if they've not matured, I'm trying to think if they've matured, might you be able to do this? I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. But if you are someone with savings bonds that are issued after a certain date, meet certain criteria, you may be able to, the income, there's an income threshold on that too. You may be able to cash those bonds, redeem those bonds, use them for qualified education expenses, which could include funding a 529, and be able to exclude the interest on those savings bonds. All right. Folks, remember, this show is educational. It's general information, because I got to tell you, what I try to do here is cover some complex topics, because when you read articles, surf the internet, a lot of times you get very general information. Sometimes this information is just way too complicated to include in an article. Sometimes it will be in professional publications, but maybe not for the general public. Some of it's too complicated. But the trouble is, if you don't understand how complicated it is, you're not making the right decision sometimes. So what I try to do here is, yes, there are shows where I give very general information, but there are shows where I try to delve a little bit deeper so that you can understand the complexities of some of these financial opportunities that you have available. Because if you don't understand them, you're not getting the right help, or you're not researching it properly, you're not making the right decisions, then you're losing benefits that are supposed to be out there and available for you. So some of this stuff gets complicated. I just want to make sure you understand it. But one of the things that is a little bit more complicated is using those savings bonds to make a qualified education expense. Certain criteria you have to meet, but I wanted to make sure that I talked about that. So your first red flag is, oh, do I have savings bonds? One. Number two, do I have someone that I could pay qualified education expenses? Three, might it be me that could have qualified education expenses? Might it be my grandchild that will have qualified education expenses? But my grandchild, they're only two. They don't have any qualified education expenses. Well, maybe you could fund a 529 with this monies. So you want to make sure you understand all the criteria that's out there. Before you cash the savings bonds, there's certain time periods. If you cashed them in January, you may not be able to do it in August. So you want to understand all the rules. I'll see if I can highlight some of those. But the big thing I wanted to make sure I talked about tonight in particular was the American Opportunity Credit. So the reference material I have used tonight, of course, is from the IRS website, irs.gov. I love the governmental websites for information that's free, and then you're going to the source. So generally, you're hoping that it's a little bit easier to understand than information you might have to piece together from going to any number of websites. And the information I found on the IRS website, a few things, and you kind of print them off and set them next to each other so you can understand this. One of the articles is called Check Out Tax Benefits for Higher Education. And the sister article to that, in my opinion, is the Tax Benefits for Education Information Center. So on the Information Center, they talk about these general categories of credits, deductions, tax-free growth, and then exempt from income. And the Checkout Tax Benefits for Higher Education goes into more depth about the credit. So when we talk about credits, this says tax credits, deductions, and savings plans can help taxpayers with their expenses for higher education. A tax credit reduces the amount of income tax you have to pay. A deduction reduces the amount of your income that's subject to tax, thus generally reducing the amount of tax you may have to pay. Certain savings plans allow the accumulated earnings to grow tax-free until money is taken out. That means, you know, you're distributing it, or allow the distribution to be tax-free, or both. And then an exclusion from income means that you won't have to pay income tax on the benefit you're receiving, but you also won't be able to use that same tax free benefit for a deduction or credit. So that alerts us to all of these tax benefits that are out there and available. You have to coordinate which benefit is going to be most beneficial to you, and you can't double dip. So that also adds an extra layer of complexity when you're looking at this. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we will be right back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. Your current temperature is 75 on Thursday, sunny with the high near 80. Thursday night, low around 51. Friday, sunny with the high near 69. Friday night, low around 48. Saturday, rain likely after 2 p.m. Saturday night, rain in a low around 59. Sunday, mostly cloudy with the high near 77. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with the low around 60. And now, back to your financial choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can also send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. Let's talk for a moment about this awesome credit that's supposed to expire at the end of 2017. And it's the American Opportunity Credit. It's worth a maximum benefit of up to $2,500 per eligible student. Let me repeat that. $2,500 worth a maximum benefit of $2,500 per eligible student. I hope that grabs the attention of anyone who thinks that they might have a chance at getting this education credit. It's only for the first 4 years at an eligible college or vocational school, and for students pursuing a degree or other recognized education credential. For students enrolled at least half time for at least one academic period during, well, this would have been 2016, so it would apply to 2017. Taxpayers can claim the American Opportunity Credit for a student enrolled in the first 3 months of 2018 as long as they paid the qualified expenses in 2017. This is the crux of the whole reason I wanted to do this show on this topic right now. If this American Opportunity Credit goes away, meaning it expires, if it's not available for 2018, and let me give you an example. Let's pretend tuition was $10,000 for the fall, and you had a 529 college savings account, and you took the $10,000 out of the 529 account to pay for the tuition. That is your benefit. That is, you know, you've used it. $10,000 of qualified education expenses, $10,000 out of the 529. That's the benefit. You don't get to use, you know, any other benefit. But let's pretend you have another $10,000 that you have to pay for the spring semester. And generally, you could pay that at the end of December, or you could pay that in January. If you pay it in December and you owe $10,000 for the first 3 months of 2018, and you still have money in the 529, you actually could take $6,000 out of the 529 and pay that toward the next spring's tuition. You could pay $4,000 out of pocket. Now, Lori, why would you do that? Pay $4,000 out of pocket if I have this 529 money? Well, if I pay $4,000 out of pocket and I otherwise qualify for this credit, meaning I meet some of the other income limitations, I could qualify for the $2,500 tax credit. So I coordinated the benefits. I didn't double dip. We ended up in my story having $20,000 of tuition, $10,000 for the fall, using the benefit of the 529. That took care of that. The other $10,000 for the spring semester we paid in December. I used $6,000 out of my 529 account. I used $4,000 out of my bank account. Boom. I didn't double dip. $4,000 out of pocket is going to qualify for the American Opportunity Credit. If I have income within the range, if I'm married, filing joint, and my page one income is under $160,000. This is my dependent child, qualified education expense for the American Opportunity Credit is tuition, fees, required fees, and I believe equipment now. Those are qualified education expenses, and I'm within those income ranges or under those income ranges. My dependent child, I am eligible for that $2,500 dollar credit. And if part of that credit wipes out my tax due, I could actually be eligible for a portion that's a refundable credit, up to $1,000 of refundable credit. So if in my story my tax was $1,500 and I qualified for a $2,500 American Opportunity Credit, well, $1,500 offsets my tax, I would still be eligible for a $1,000 refundable credit. If I didn't have any tax, I would at all. So then there's no point in having, you know, the American Opportunity Credit maybe, but I could be eligible for the refundable credit. I still could be eligible for that $1,000 refundable credit. So you still have an opportunity to get that credit if you otherwise used some of the other education benefits available to you. Gets complicated, doesn't it? But complicated, but worth $2,500. I think that could be worth looking at. Another credit that I like a lot is the Lifetime Learning Credit. And I bet this is one that a lot of people just forget about or don't pay attention to, because maybe you're an adult and you decided to go back for your master's and you don't think about it. Maybe you're working full-time. You're just taking classes here and there. Well, the Lifetime Learning Credit could apply to you. It's worth a maximum benefit up to $2,000 per tax return. Remember, that's a credit, a tax credit. It's up to $2,000 per tax return per year, no matter how many students qualify. It's available for all years of post-secondary education and for courses to acquire or improve job skills. It's available for an unlimited number of tax years. Now, the only issue I see with the Lifetime Learning Credit is that the income range isn't as high as it was when we talked about the American Opportunity Credit. Remember the American Opportunity Credit? I said if you're married, filing joint, and it's under 160, that's a great, great credit. If you were single, it was under 80. Well, for the Lifetime Learning Credit, it's if you're single, under, you know, 55,000 or under, you could qualify for this credit. It's up to a certain percentage of expenses. I think it's 20% of the first 10,000. So if you don't spend 10,000, it's not going to be $2,000. But for married, filing joint, it's under 111,000. So for those folks who are out there taking some additional coursework to either acquire or improve job skills, undergraduate work, graduate work, maybe you don't qualify for the American Opportunity Credit because that's only available for 4 years. You can't use that more than 4 years. You still might qualify for the Lifetime Learning Credit. So let's not miss out on that. But again, that income sometimes, throws people out. So those are a couple great tax credits. Make sure you are aware of them and how you qualify for them. And if you're worried about tax reform not going through and maybe that American Opportunity Credit not being available in 2018, you might want to think about whether or not to pay that tuition at the end of December, as long as it's for tuition for a semester that is in the first 3 months of the following year. The IRS will allow it. Now, let's pretend you paid it in December and they decide to extend the credit. If you paid it in December 2017, you are not going to be able to use it in 2018. It goes on when you pay it. The other thing I like to remind people about, that if you are taking money out of a 529 for the tax-free withdrawal to pay for qualified education expenses, and the 529 qualified education expenses also include room and board, you want to make sure you're doing it for the same year. You can't pay the tuition in, let's pretend, August, pay $10,000 out of your bank account thinking, oh, I'll reimburse myself later. And then March of next year, you decide to reimburse yourself the $10,000 out of the 529 account. That is in two different years. You have to make sure that you match the withdrawals from the 529 accounts for the same year you have the expense. Fortunately, some people don't realize that it also applies to room and board. So we've been able to save a few folks from taking out the wrong amounts by saying, well, was there room and board expenses? Okay, we can match that up and make sure that it is covered. Because if you don't have qualified education expenses and you take money out of the 529 in a year that you don't have qualified education expenses, then it will be deemed a disqualifying distribution. And then the earnings on that distribution will not only be taxable, just the earnings will not only be taxable, but they will also be subject to a 10% penalty. So you want to be very careful. Now, you heard me talking about 529s. I kind of got ahead of myself a little bit. When we talk about 529s, that's where we talk about the tax-free growth. So remember I said certain savings plans allow the accumulated earnings to grow tax-free until the money's taken out for a qualified education expense. That's the 529. That's that extra benefit. These are the benefits that you have to coordinate. The wonderful benefit we have as Pennsylvanians is that when we make contributions to a 529 account, we also get a deduction on our Pennsylvania income tax return to the extent that we have income and not to exceed a $14,000 amount, because that's the federal annual gift amount, and that's how Pennsylvania tied that in. So if I have three kids and I make $100,000, I could put $14,000 per child into a 529, 30, that's 42, that, did I do that right? $42,000 contribution to a 529, that's a deduction on my tax return at 3.07% income tax to Pennsylvania. That's money right there. So that's a pretty good deal. You already have a return on that money. And then if you invested in a college savings plan and you continue to earn money on that contribution, and you eventually take the money out for qualified education expenses, it will be tax-free. Some people get nervous about putting money into the 529 because they say, well, gosh, how do I know if my child will go to college? Or how do I know how much to do? What if I put too much in? Well, we generally don't recommend that people overfund them, but if your child ends up getting a scholarship, or if they become disabled, or there's a death, there are exceptions to the 10% penalty. In fact, I think even if they go into the military, that's an exception. So if they have an exception to the 10% penalty, you could take the money out of the 529 account, and then you'd only be subject to income tax on the growth in earnings, which you would have had anyway had you saved it in a regular account. So you're not much worse, and you got the years of tax deferred growth on that. All right, so keep that in mind. If you have more than one child, you could also name a different child the beneficiary. So you can change the beneficiary on a 529 college savings plan. If the oldest decides not to go to college, you could name the younger child, or you could name a cousin. It has to be a related party. You could name another beneficiary. You could name yourself the beneficiary. All right, so lots of options around 529 college savings accounts. So when we come back, I'll try to wrap this up with some closing thoughts. If you have questions, though, we, of course, have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about education tax benefits tonight. A little bit complicated. Usually I'll go home after a show like this and my husband will say, honey, you got into way too much detail, but I can't help myself. I want people to understand the complexity of some of the financial decisions you have to make because it's important and it can make a difference. I have seen too many people get burned from listening to general advice and even general advice from some professionals, and it just breaks my heart. Years ago, I had a gentleman who was told that he could take the inherited IRA from his mother and put it in his own account. So he took $120,000 of an inherited IRA and put it into his own IRA, and it was totally not allowed at all. Instead, he ended up with $120,000 taxable distribution on his tax return. And if we hadn't caught it and fixed it when we did, he wasn't working with us, by the way, it was just a tax client, that he would have had an excess contribution to his IRA. And he thought he was getting good advice. So I think it's just so important to understand the intricacies of your financial decisions and make sure that you research if you plan to move forward with something that might seem a little bit more complicated. All right. Let me try to wrap up these education tax benefits, because there's actually a whole chart. There's a whole publication, publication 970, it's called. And I think the name of it is Education Tax Benefits or something. So publication 970, you guys, it's 95 pages long. 95 pages long. That is a lot to figure out. I am not kidding when I say this stuff could be complicated. But I also don't like when there's money left on the table. If it was something you didn't know about, we only have 3 years to amend tax returns. So in fact, if any listeners are listening who think this may have applied to them in the past 3 years, you have 3 years from the due date of the tax return to amend. So you want to jump on that and check that out. Again, I would look for things like that lifetime learning credit. I think people miss that more than we realize. And making sure you take advantage of the American Opportunity Credit if it's available to you, keeping in mind it's only available for 4 years. You can't, you know, think about it. If you have a child who starts school in the fall in year one And you pay tuition in the fall, you pay tuition the next fall, second year, the third, the fourth, and then you pay spring in the fifth year. You can't take the American Opportunity Credit in the fifth year, only 4 years. We talked about qualified tuition programs, those college savings plans, 529s. And we talked about lifetime learning credit. Let me quickly mention additional benefits, student loan interest deduction. I don't recall if that was extended or not, or if that was on the chopping block. But in the past, we would have a student loan interest deduction. I actually rarely see people getting this. The income thresholds are kind of low. You must have been at least a half-time student in a degree program. You'll get a tax document telling you what your student loan interest is. And if you're single and you make less than $65,000, you might get a little bit of a deduction. It's capped. If you make over 80, you phased out. That's when you're single. There's a phase out in between there. For married filing joint, if it's under $130,000, you might qualify for some student loan interest deduction. If you're over $160,000 on a joint return, you don't get it. So the student loan interest deduction. You also, the tuition and fees deduction I mentioned may be gone. Well, it is gone for 2017, but I don't know if it might be extended. The Coverdell Education Savings Account, that is a way to save where you can use the account for education costs even at the K through 12 level. The issue I've seen with that is the amount you can put in is so low. It used to be like $2,000. I haven't looked it up recently, but it was so low, it's hard to save money for that. But for people who know they want to send their kids to private school, that might be a little benefit that grandma, grandpa could do, or even the parents. There's also income thresholds on that, under $95,000 if you're single and under $190,000 if you're married filing joint. So you could pack away a little bit of money into an account like that, as long as it's used by age 30, unless it's a special needs beneficiary. There is another tax benefit. This I haven't seen people use too often, and I like to dissuade people from taking money out of IRAs. But there is an education exemption to additional tax on an early IRA distribution if money is used for qualified education expenses for undergraduate and graduate education. So you would still have the income tax on the withdrawal from the IRA, but you can avoid the 10% penalty. And I think typically they have a cap on that as well. I'm not getting into all these details. I'm already getting too detailed tonight, which could confuse people. Education Savings Bond Program, that applies to qualified Series EE bonds. Remember I said, look in the safe deposit box on top of the fridge. If you have EE bonds that were issued after 1989 or Series I bonds, you may be able to use those to pay qualified education expenses for undergraduate or graduate education. And money into a 529 plan also counts as a qualified education expense. By doing that, you can avoid having to include the interest income when you redeem those savings bonds on your tax return. A lot of people invested automatically in savings bonds, and a lot of people forget about their savings bonds. I know this. I've seen it. Think about whether you remember mom and dad talking about savings bonds. They could still be hidden in a safe deposit box somewhere or in a shoebox in the top of their closet. Some of those bonds are so old they may not qualify for this, because in the old days we had e-bonds, but even some of the EE bonds were pre-1989. This applies only to those EE bonds that are 1989 or later. There are some other requirements, so it's not as simple as that. But one of the additional requirements is what income range the income range for single people under $77,550. There's a phase out up to $92,550. These are 2016 numbers, by the way. The IRS had not updated for 2017 numbers in this publication. If it's over that and you're single, then it wouldn't apply to you. But if you're married filing joint and you're making under $116,000 and you have maybe some children that you could fund a 529 for, you might be able to use your savings bond. So you might want to check that out. There's other education benefits, of course, that are available through employer-provided programs, business deductions for work-related education, scholarships, fellowship grants, tuition reductions. So there's a whole slew. There's a 95-page publication on this. My big takeaway for them tonight is, if you think you might qualify for the American Opportunity Credit or even maybe the Lifetime Learning Credit, you want to make sure that you are keeping track of when you're paying, how you're paying, and understanding that the American Opportunity Credit is set to expire at the end of this year. So if you think, or if we don't get the tax reform, if there's a chance it's going to go away, make sure you set aside enough money so that by December, if you want to pull the trigger on this and pay the spring tuition, you're going to have the money in December to pay it, and then you might be able to qualify for the American Opportunity Credit for 2017 before it's all gone. That's what I want people to understand. All right. So the American Opportunity Credit. Well, I'm spent. That was a lot to talk about and may not apply to everybody, but applies to a lot more people than you realize. Because let me tell you, we have a lot of people who are coming in and setting up 529 accounts for their grandchildren and folks who are setting it up for their children. Because again, we are very lucky in Pennsylvania to have the deduction on our Pennsylvania income tax return to the extent that we have income and capped at $14,000, of course. All right. Oh, and both spouses could do that as well. So if you have a husband and a wife and you make $100,000 each, or let's say you make $50,000 each, as long as you each have that amount of income, you could each put $14,000 into a plan for any number of children. I could do it for three kids as long as I had that much income, four kids, whatever. $14,000 per child, per donor, as long as you have that much in income. So that is money's going into a college savings account. You know what? Now that I'm thinking about that too, you know, here's something else that I'm seeing more of that many people might not realize. If you have a health savings account that you yourself are contributing to, maybe it's not your employer. We can't do this with pre-tax dollars, but if you are making contributions for yourself, not through payroll deduction, you can have a high deductible health insurance plan where you have a health savings account that you are personally funding. You get a deduction for that on your federal tax return. You also could get a deduction for that on your personal, on your Pennsylvania return. The reason I thought of that is because when we talk about the deduction for college savings plans, 529s, Pennsylvania doesn't give us too many deductions, folks. Really, not too many. That's why we need to understand what they are and when they apply to us. So it could be a 529 plan, and you may be eligible depending on what kind of health savings account you may have and how you're making those contributions. All right. It's a beautiful evening. I hope you all enjoy your night tonight. Next week, well, and we're going to have Labor Day on Monday, so I certainly hope everyone enjoys the fruits of their labor and also has the opportunity to relax on Labor Day. I'm going to be relaxing myself. I hope you all do as well. But when we come back, I don't want to forget about our labor. Next Wednesday, I want to talk about work-related financial considerations. Work-related, what does that mean? Well, what do we have coming up in the fall here? Typically, we have open enrollment. Open enrollment might be where if you're working for a big employer and they provide certain employee benefits, that's the time to review those. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about 401k contributions. I want to talk about Social Security tax, maybe stock options, employee stock purchase plans, kind of anything around work-related decisions, financial considerations. Maybe you're someone who has a pension or maybe you don't. What are you going to do about that? So we're going to talk about work-related financial considerations next week after Labor Day. We have coming up next Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. I want to thank Lori for answering calls. Thank you, Shandi, for being here. She does a great job each week. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.